She hated thinking of Jace and Valentine as being in any way alike, even in so trivial a thing as a glance.
Luke is trying to get the Clave to change, to think in a new way. That's exactly what Valentine did. Even if his goals were, well, not the same. Luke's an iconoclast. He wants change. To Valentine, the Inquisitor represents the old, hidebound Clave he hates so much.
And they were friends once, Clary said. Luke and Valentine.
The marks of that which once hath been, Jace said.
And Clary could tell he was quoting something from the half-mocking tone in his voice.
Unfortunately, you never really hate anyone as much as someone you cared about once. I imagine Valentine has something special planned for Luke down the road after he takes over.
But he won't take over, said Clary. And when Jace said nothing, her voice rose. He won't win. He can't. He doesn't really want war, not against Shadowhunters and Downworlders.
What makes you think Shadowhunters will fight with Downworlders? Jace said.
And he still wasn't looking at her. They were walking along the canal street, and he was looking out at the water, his jaw set.
Just because Luke says so? Luke's an idealist.
And why is that a bad thing to be?
It's not. I'm just not one, said Jace.
And Clary felt a cold pang in her heart at the emptiness in his voice. Despair, anger, hate. These are demon qualities. He's acting the way he thinks he should act.
They had reached Amatis's house. Clary stopped at the foot of the steps, turning to face him.
Maybe, she said. But you're not like him, either.
Jace started a little at that, or maybe it was the firmness in her tone. He turned his head to look at her for what felt like the first time since they left the Lightwoods.
Clary, he began and broke off with an intake of breath.
There's blood on your sleeve. Are you hurt?
He moved toward her, taking her wrist in his hand. Clary glanced down and saw to her surprise that he was right. There was an irregular scarlet stain on the right sleeve of her coat. What was odd was that it was still bright red. Shouldn't dried blood be a darker color, she found?
That's not my blood.
He relaxed slightly, his grip on her wrist loosening.
Is it the Inquisitor's?
She shook her head.
I actually think it's Sebastian's.
Sebastian's blood?
Yes. When he came into the hall the other night, remember, his face was bleeding. I think Isabel must have clawed him, but anyway, I touched his face and got his blood on me.
She looked more closely at it. I thought Amatis washed the coat, but I guess she didn't.
She expected him to let go of her then, but instead he held her wrist for a long moment examining the blood before returning her arm to her, apparently satisfied.
Thanks.
She stared at him for a moment before shaking her head.
You're not going to tell me what that was about, are you?
Not a chance.
She threw her arms up in exasperation. I'm going inside. I'll see you later. She turned and headed up the steps to Amatis's front door. There was no way she could have known that the moment she turned her back, the smile vanished from Jace's face, or that he stood for a long time in the darkness once the door closed behind her, looking after her, and twisting a small piece of thread over and over between his fingers.
Isabel, Simon said.
It had taken him a few tries to find her door, but the scream of "Go away!" that had emanated from behind this one convinced him he'd made the right choice.
Isabel, let me in.
There was a muffled thump and the door reverberated slightly, as if Isabel had thrown something at it, possibly a shoe.
I don't want to talk to you and Clary. I don't want to talk to anyone. Leave me alone, Simon.
Clary's not here, said Simon. And I'm not going away until you talk to me.
Alec! Isabel yelled. Jace! Make him go away!
Simon waited. There was no sound from downstairs. Either Alec had left or he was lying low.
They're not here, Isabel. It's just me.
There was a silence. Finally, Isabel spoke again. This time her voice came from much nearer, as if she were standing just on the other side of the door. You're alone?
I'm alone, Simon said.
The door cracked open. Isabel was standing there in a black slip, her hair lying long and tangled over her shoulders. Simon had never seen her like this,
barefoot, with her hair unbrushed and no makeup on.
You can come in.
He stepped past her into the room. In the light from the door, he could see that it looked, as his mother would have said, like a tornado had hit it. Clothes were scattered across the floor in piles. A duffel bag opened on the floor as if it had exploded. Isabel's bright, silver-gold whip hung from one bedpost, a lacy white bra from another. Simon averted his eyes. The curtains were drawn, the lamps extinguished. Isabel flopped down on the edge of the bed and looked at him with bitter amusement.
A blushing vampire? Who'd have guessed?
She raised her chin.
So, I let you in. What do you want?
Despite her angry glare, Simon thought she looked younger than usual, her eyes huge and black in her pinched white face. He could see the white scars that traced her light skin, all over her bare arms, her back and collarbones, even her legs. If Clary remains a shadow hunter, he thought, one day she'll look like this, scarred all over. The thought didn't upset him as once it might have done. There was something about the way Isabel wore her scars, as if she was proud of them. She had something in her hands, something she was turning over and over between her fingers. It was a small something that glinted dully in the half-light. He thought for a moment it might be a piece of jewelry.
"What happened to Max?" Simon said. "It wasn't your fault."
She didn't look at him. She was staring down at the object in her hands. "Do you know what this is?" she said, and held it up. It seemed to be a small toy soldier, carved out of wood. A toy shadow hunter, Simon realized, complete with painted-on black gear. The silver glint he'd noticed was the paint on the little sword it held. It was nearly worn away. "It was Jace's," she said without waiting for him to answer. "It was the only toy he had when he came from Idris. I don't know. Maybe it was part of a bigger set once. I think he made it himself, but he never said much about it. He used to take it everywhere with him when he was little, always in a pocket or whatever. Then one day I noticed Max carrying it around. Jace must have been around 13 then. He just gave it to Max, I guess when he got too old for it. Anyway, it was in Max's hand when they found him. It was like he grabbed it to hold on to when Sebastian, when he..." She broke off. The effort she was making not to cry was visible. Her mouth was set in a grimace, as if it were twisting itself out of shape. "I should have been there protecting him. I should have been there for him to hold on to, not some stupid little wooden toy." She flung it down onto the bed, her eyes shining.
"You were unconscious," Simon protested. "You nearly died, Izzy. There was nothing you could have done."
Isabel shook her head, her tangled hair bouncing on her shoulders. She looked fierce and wild.
"What do you know about it?" she demanded. "Did you know that Max came to us the night he died and told us he'd seen someone climbing the demon towers? And I told him he was dreaming and sent him away. And he was right. I bet it was that bastard Sebastian climbing the tower so he could take the wards down. And Sebastian killed him so he couldn't tell anyone what he'd seen. If I'd just listened, just taken one second to listen, it wouldn't have happened."
"There's no way you could have known," Simon said. "And about Sebastian, he wasn't really the Penhollow's cousin. He had everyone fooled."
Isabel didn't look surprised.
"I know," she said. "I heard you talking to Alec and Jace. I was listening from the top of the stairs."
"You were eavesdropping?"
She shrugged.
"Up to the part where you said you were going to come and talk to me. Then I came back here. I didn't feel like seeing you."
She looked at him sideways. "I'll give you this much, though. You're persistent."
"Look, Isabel." Simon took a step forward. He was oddly, suddenly conscious of the fact that she wasn't very dressed. So he held back from putting a hand on her shoulder or doing anything else overtly soothing. "When my father died, I knew it wasn't my fault, but I still kept thinking over and over of all the things I should have done, should have said before he died."
"Yeah, well, this is my fault," Isabel said. "And what I should have done is listened. And what I still can do is track down the bastard who did this and kill him."
"I'm not sure that'll help."
"How do you know?" Isabel demanded. "Did you find the person responsible for your father's death and kill him?"
My father had a heart attack," Simon said. "So, no."
Then you don't know what you're talking about, do you?
Isabel raised her chin and looked at him squarely.
Come here.
What?
She beckoned imperiously with her index finger. Come here, Simon.
Reluctantly, he came toward her. He was barely a foot away when she seized him by the front of his shirt, yanking him toward her. Their faces were inches apart. He could see how the skin below her eyes shone with the marks of recent tears.
You know what I really need right now?
She said, enunciating each word clearly. Simon said. No?
To be distracted, she said,
and with a half-turn yanked him bodily onto the bed beside her. He landed on his back amid a tangled pile of clothes.
Isabel, Simon protested weakly, do you really think this is going to make you feel any better?
Trust me, Isabel said, placing a hand on his chest, just over his unbeating heart. I feel better already. Clary lay awake in bed, staring up at a single patch of moonlight as it made its way across the ceiling. Her nerves were still too jangled from the events of the day for her to sleep, and it didn't help that Simon hadn't come back before dinner, or after it. Eventually, she'd voiced her concern to Luke, who'd thrown on a coat and headed over to the Lightwoods. He'd returned, looking amused.
Simon's fine, Clary, he said. Go to bed.
And then he left again, with Amatis, off to another one of their interminable meetings at the Accords Hall. She wondered if anyone had cleaned up the Inquisitor's blood yet. With nothing else to do, she'd gone to bed, but sleep had remained stubbornly out of reach. Clary kept seeing Valentine in her head, reaching into the Inquisitor and ripping his heart out, the way he had turned to her and said,
"You'd keep your mouth shut for your brother's sake, if not your own."
Above all, the secret she had learned from Ithuriel lay like a weight on her chest. Under all these anxieties was the fear, constant as a heartbeat, that her mother would die. Where was Magnus? There was a rustling sound by the curtains, and a sudden wash of moonlight poured into the room. Clary sat bolt upright, scrabbling for the seraph blade she kept on her bedside table.
It's all right.
A hand came down on hers. A slender, scarred, familiar hand.
It's me.
Clary drew her breath in sharply, and he took his hand back. Jace, she said, what are you doing here? What's wrong? For a moment he didn't answer, and she twisted to look at him, pulling the bedclothes up around her. She felt herself flush, acutely conscious of the fact that she was wearing only pajama bottoms and a flimsy camisole. And then she saw his expression, and her embarrassment faded.
Jace, she whispered.
He was standing by the head of her bed, still wearing his white morning clothes, and there was nothing light or sarcastic or distant in the way he was looking down at her. He was very pale, and his eyes looked haunted and nearly black with strain. Are you all right?
I don't know, he said in the dazed manner of someone just waking up from a dream. I wasn't going to come here. I've been wandering around all night. I couldn't sleep. And I kept finding myself walking here, to you.
She sat up straighter, letting the bedclothes fall down around her hips. Why can't you sleep? Did something happen? She asked and immediately felt stupid. What hadn't happened? Jace, however, barely seemed to hear the question.
I had to see you, he said mostly to himself. I know I shouldn't, but I had to.
Well, sit down then, she said, pulling her legs back to make a space for him to sit at the edge of the bed. Because you're freaking me out. Are you sure nothing's happened?
I didn't say nothing happened.
He sat down on the bed facing her. He was close enough that she could have just leaned forward and kissed him. Her chest tightened. Is there bad news? Is everyone...
It's not bad, said Jace. And it's not news. It's the opposite of news. It's something I've always known, and you probably know it too. God knows I haven't hidden it all that well.
His eyes searched her face slowly, as if he meant to memorize it.
What happened, he said, and hesitated, is that I realized something.
Jace, she whispered suddenly, and for no reason she could identify. She was frightened of what he was about to say. Jace, you don't have to...
I was trying to go... somewhere, Jay said. But I kept getting pulled back here. I couldn't stop walking, couldn't stop thinking. About the first time I ever saw you, and how after that I couldn't forget you. I wanted to, but I couldn't stop myself. I forced Hodge to let me be the one who came to find you and bring you back to the Institute. And even back then, in that stupid coffee shop, when I saw you sitting on that couch with Simon, even then that felt wrong to me. I should have been the one sitting with you, the one who made you laugh like that. I couldn't get rid of that feeling, that it should have been me. And the more I knew you, the more I felt it. It had never been like that for me before. I'd always wanted a girl and then gotten to know her and not wanted her anymore. But with you, the feeling just got stronger and stronger until that night when you showed up at Renwick's and I knew. And then to find out that the reason I felt like that, like you were some part of me I'd lost and never even knew I was missing until I saw you again. That the reason was that you were my sister. It felt like some sort of cosmic joke. Like God was spitting on me. I don't even know for what. For thinking that I could actually get to have you? That I would deserve something like that, to be that happy? I couldn't imagine what it was I'd done that I was being punished for. If you're being punished, Clary said, then so am I. Because all those things you felt, I felt them too. But we can't. We have to stop feeling this way because it's our only chance. Jace's hands were tight at his sides. Our only chance for what? To be together at all. Because otherwise we can't ever be around each other. Not even just in the same room, and I can't stand that. I'd rather have you in my life even as a brother than not at all. And I'm supposed to sit by while you date boys, fall in love with someone else, get married? His voice tightened. And meanwhile, I'll die a little bit more every day watching. No, you won't care by then, she said, wondering even as she said it if she could stand the idea of a Jace who didn't care. She hadn't thought as far ahead as he had, and when she tried to imagine watching him fall in love with someone else, marry someone else, she couldn't even picture it. Couldn't picture anything but an empty black tunnel that stretched out ahead of her forever. Please, if we don't say anything, if we just pretend... There is no pretending, Jay said with absolute clarity. I love you, and I will love you until I die. And if there's a life after that, I'll love you then. She caught her breath. He had said it. The words there was no going back from. She struggled for a reply, but none came. And I know you think I just want to be with you to show myself what a monster I am, he said. And maybe I am a monster. I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is that even if there's demon blood inside me, there is human blood inside me as well. And I couldn't love you like I do if I wasn't at least a little bit human. Because demons want, but they don't love. And I... He stood up then, with a sort of violent suddenness, and crossed the room to the window. He looked lost as he had in the great hall standing over Max's body. Jace? Clary said, alarmed. And when he didn't answer, she scrambled to her feet and went to him, laying her hand on his arm. He continued staring out the window. The reflections in the glass were nearly transparent. Ghostly outlines of a tall boy and a smaller girl, her hand clamped anxiously on his sleeve. What's wrong?
I shouldn't have told you that, he said, not looking at her. I'm sorry. That was probably a lot to take in. You looked so... shocked.
The tension underlying his voice was a live wire. I was, she said. I've spent the past few days wondering if you hated me. And then I saw you tonight, and I was pretty sure you did.
Hated you? He echoed, looking bewildered.
He reached out then and touched her face lightly, just the tips of her fingers against her skin.
I told you I couldn't sleep. Tomorrow by midnight we'll be either at war or under Valentine's rule. This could be the last night of our lives. Certainly the last even barely ordinary one. The last night we go to sleep and get up just as we always have.
and all I could think of was that I wanted to spend it with you.
Her heart skipped a beat.
Jace, I don't mean it like that, he said. I won't touch you. Not if you don't want me to. I know it's wrong. God, it's all kinds of wrong. But I just want to lie down with you and wake up with you, just once. Just once ever in my life. There was desperation in his voice. It's just this one night. In the grand scheme of things, how much can one night matter?
Because think how we'll feel in the morning. Think how much worse it will be pretending that we don't mean anything to each other in front of everyone else after we've spent the night together, even if all we do is sleep. It's like having just a little bit of a drug. It only makes you want more.
But that was why he had told her what he had, she realized. Because it wasn't true, not for him. There was nothing that could make it worse, just as there was nothing that could make it better. What he felt was as final as a life sentence, and could she really say it was so different for her? And even if she hoped it might be, even if she hoped she might someday be persuaded by time or reason or gradual attrition not to feel this way anymore, it didn't matter. There was nothing she had ever wanted in her life more than she wanted this night with Jace.
Close the curtains, then, before you come to bed, she said. I can't sleep with this much light in the room.
The look that washed over his face was pure incredulity. He really hadn't expected her to say yes, Clary realized in surprise, and a moment later he had caught her and hugged her to him, his face buried in her still messy from sleep hair.
Clary. Come to bed, she said softly. It's late.
She drew away from him and returned to the bed, crawling up onto it and drawing the covers up to her waist. Somehow, looking at him like this, she could almost imagine that things were different, that it was many years from now and they'd been together so long that they'd done this 100 times, that every night belonged to them and not just this one. She propped her chin on her hands and watched him as he reached to jerk the curtains shut and then unzipped his white jacket and hung it over the back of a chair. He was wearing a pale gray t-shirt underneath, and the marks that twined his bare arms shone darkly as he unbuckled his weapons belt and laid it on the floor. He unlaced his boots and stepped out of them as he came toward the bed, and he stretched out very carefully beside Clary. Lying on his back, he turned his head to look at her. A very little light filtered into the room past the edge of the curtains, just enough for her to see the outline of his face and the bright gleam of his eyes.
"Good night, Clary," he said.
His hands lay flat on either side of him, his arms at his sides. He seemed barely to be breathing. She wasn't sure she was breathing herself. She slid her own hand across the bedsheet, just far enough that their fingers touched, so lightly that she would probably hardly have been aware of it had she been touching anyone but Jace. As it was, the nerve endings in her fingertips prickled softly, as if she were holding them over a low flame. She felt him tense beside her, and then relax. He had shut his eyes, and his lashes cast fine shadows against the curve of his cheekbones. His mouth curled into a smile as if he sensed her watching him, and she wondered how he would look in the morning, with his hair messed and sleep circles under his eyes. Despite everything, the thought gave her a jolt of happiness. She laced her fingers through his. "Good night," she whispered, and, hands clasped like children in a fairy tale, she fell asleep beside him in the dark. Chapter 15. Things Fall Apart. Luke had spent most of the night watching the moon's progress across the translucent roof of the Hall of Accords like a silver coin rolling across the clear surface of a glass table. When the moon was close to full, as it was right now, he felt a corresponding sharpening in his vision and sense of smell, even when he was in human form. Now, for instance, he could smell the sweat of doubt in the room, and the underlying sharp tang of fear. He could sense the restless worry of his pack of wolves out in Brosselin Forest as they paced the darkness beneath the trees and waited for news from him. "Lucian!" Amatus's voice in his ear was low but piercing. "Lucian!" Snapped out of his reverie,
Luke fought to focus his exhausted eyes on the scene in front of him. It was a ragged little group, those who had agreed to at least listen to his plan, fewer than he had hoped for. Many he knew from his old life in Idris, the Penhallows, the Lightwoods, the Ravenscars, and just as many he had just met, like the Monteverdes, who ran the Lisbon Institute and spoke in a mixture of Portuguese and English, or Nazreen Chaudhry, the stern-featured head of the Mumbai Institute. Her dark green sari was patterned in elaborate runes of such a bright silver that Luke instinctively flinched when she passed too close.
"Really, Lucian," said Mayris Lightwood.
Her small white face was pinched by exhaustion and grief. Luke hadn't really expected either her or her husband to come, but they had agreed almost as soon as he'd mentioned it to them. He supposed he ought to be grateful they were here at all, even if grief did tend to make Mayris more sharp-tempered than usual.
"You're the one who wanted us all here. The least you can do is pay attention."
"He has been." Amita sat with her legs drawn under her like a young girl, but her expression was firm. "It's not Lucian's fault that we've been going around in circles for the past hour."
"And we'll keep going around and round until we figure out a solution," said Patrick Penhallow, an edge to his voice.
"With all due respect, Patrick," said Nazreen in her clipped accent, "there may be no solution to this problem. The best we can hope for is a plan. A plan that doesn't involve either mass slavery or..."
began Gia, Patrick's wife, and then she broke off, biting her lip. She was a pretty, slender woman who looked very like her daughter, Aline. Luke remembered when Patrick had run off to the Beijing Institute and married her. It had been something of a scandal, as he'd been supposed to marry a girl his parents had already picked out for him in Idris. But Patrick never had liked to do what he was told, a quality for which Luke was now grateful.
"Or allying ourselves with downworlders," said Luke. "I'm afraid there's no way around that."
"That's not the problem, and you know it," said Mayris. "It's the whole business about seats on the council. The Clave will never agree to it. You know that. 4 whole seats?"
"Not 4," Luke said. "1 each for the Fair Folk, the Moon's Children, and the Children of Lilith."
"The warlocks, the fae, and the lycanthropes," said soft-voiced Signor Monteverde, his eyebrows arched. "And what of the vampires?"
"They haven't promised me anything," Luke admitted. "And I haven't promised them anything either. They may not be eager to join the council. They're none too fond of my kind, and none too fond of meetings and rules. But the door is open to them should they change their minds."
"Malachi and his lot will never agree to it. And we may not have enough council votes without them," muttered Patrick. "Besides, without the vampires, what chance do we have?"
"A very good one," snapped Amatis, who seemed to believe in Luke's plan even more than he did. "There are many downworlders who will fight with us, and they are powerful indeed. The warlocks alone." With a shake of her head, Signora Monteverde turned to her husband.
"This plan is mad. It will never work. Downworlders cannot be trusted."
"It worked during the uprising," said Luke.
The Portuguese woman's lips curled back.
"Only because Valentine was fighting with fools for an army," she said, "not demons. And how are we to know his old circle members will not go back to him the moment he calls them to his side?"
"Be careful what you say, Signora," rumbled Robert Lightwood.
It was the first time he had spoken in more than an hour. He'd spent most of the evening motionless, immobilized by sorrow. There were lines in his face Luke could have sworn hadn't been there 3 days ago. His torment was plain in his taut shoulders and clenched fists. Luke could hardly blame him. He had never much liked Robert, but there was something about the sight of such a big man made helpless by grief that was painful to witness.
"If you think I would join with Valentine after Max's death, he had my boy murdered."
"Robert," Mayris murmured. She put her hand on his arm.
"If we do not join with him," said Signor Monteverde, "all our children may die."
"If you think that, then why are you here?" Amatis rose to her feet. "I thought we had agreed."
"So did I." Luke's head ached.
It was always like this with them, he thought. 2 steps forward and a step back. They were as bad as warring downworlders themselves, if only they could see it.
Maybe they'd all be better off if they solved their problems with combat the way the pack did.
A flash of movement at the doors of the hall caught his eye. It was momentary, and if it had not been so close to the full moon, he might not have seen it or recognized the figure who passed quickly before the doors. He wondered for a moment if he was imagining things. Sometimes, when he was very tired, he thought he saw Jocelyn, in the flicker of a shadow, in the play of light on a wall. But this wasn't Jocelyn. Luke rose to his feet.
I'm taking 5 minutes for some air. I'll be back.
He felt them watching him as he made his way to the front doors. All of them, even Amatus. Señor Monteverde whispered something to his wife in Portuguese. Luke caught lobo, the word for wolf, in the stream of words.
They probably think I'm going outside to run in circles and bark at the moon.
The air outside was fresh and cold, the sky a slate steel gray. Dawn reddened the sky in the east and gave a pale pink cast to the white marble steps leading down from the hall doors. Jace was waiting for him, halfway down the stairs. The white morning clothes he wore hit Luke like a slap in the face, a reminder of all the death they'd just endured here, and were about to endure again. Luke paused several steps above Jace.
What are you doing here, Jonathan?
Jace said nothing, and Luke mentally cursed his forgetfulness. Jace didn't like being called Jonathan, and usually responded to the name with a sharp objection. This time, though, he didn't seem to care. The face he raised to Luke was as grimly set as the faces of any of the adults in the hall. Though Jace was still a year away from being an adult under Clave law, he'd already seen worse things in his short life than most adults could even imagine.
Were you looking for your parents? You mean the Lightwoods?
Jace shook his head. No, I don't want to talk to them. I was looking for you.
Is it about Clary?
Luke descended several steps until he stood just above Jace.
Is she all right?
She's fine. The mention of Clary seemed to make Jace tense all over, which in turn sparked Luke's nerves. But Jace would never say Clary was all right if she weren't.
Then what is it?
Jace looked past him toward the doors of the hall.
How is it going in there? Any progress?
Not really, Luke admitted. As much as they don't want to surrender to Valentine, they like the idea of downworlders on the council even less. And without the promise of seats on the council, my people won't fight.
Jace's eyes sparked.
The Clave is going to hate that idea.
They don't have to love it. They only have to like it better than they like the idea of suicide.
They'll stall, Jace advised him. I'd give them a deadline if I were you. The Clave works better with deadlines.
Luke couldn't help but smile.
All the downworlders I can summon will be approaching the North Gate at twilight. If the Clave agrees to fight with them by then, they'll enter the city. If not, they'll turn around. I couldn't leave it any later than that. It barely gives us enough time to get to Brosselin by midnight as it is.
Jace whistled.
That's theatrical. Hoping the sight of all those downworlders will inspire the Clave, or scare them?
Probably a little of both. Many of the Clave members are associated with institutes like you. They're a lot more used to the sight of downworlders. It's the native Idrisians I'm worried about. The sight of downworlders at their gates might send them into a panic. On the other hand, it can't hurt for them to be reminded how vulnerable they are.
As if on cue, Jace's gaze flicked up to the ruins of the guard, a black scar on the hillside over the city.
I'm not sure anyone needs more reminders of that.
He glanced back at Luke, his eyes very serious.
I want to tell you something. And I want it to be in confidence.
Luke couldn't hide his surprise.
Why tell me? Why not the Lightwoods?
Because you're the one who's in charge here, really. You know that. Luke hesitated. Something about Jace's white and tired face drew sympathy out of his own exhaustion. Sympathy and a desire to show this boy, who had been so betrayed and badly used by the adults in his life, that not all adults were like that. That there were some he could rely on.
All right. And, Jay said, because I trust you to know how to explain it to Clary.
Explain what to Clary?
Why I had to do it.
Jace's eyes were wide in the light of the rising sun. It made him look years younger.
I'm going after Sebastian, Luke. I know how to find him, and I'm going to follow him until he leads me to Valentine.
Luke let his breath out in surprise.
You know how to find him?
Magnus showed me how to use a tracking spell when I was staying with him in Brooklyn. We were trying to use my father's ring to find him.
It didn't work, but you're not a warlock. You shouldn't be able to do a tracking spell.
These are runes, like the way the Inquisitor watched me when I went to see Valentine on the ship. All I needed to make it work was something of Sebastian's.
But we went over this with the Penhallows. He left nothing behind. His room was utterly cleared out, probably for exactly this reason.
I found something, said Jace. A thread soaked in his blood. It's not much, but it's enough. I tried it, and it worked.
You can't go herring off after Valentine on your own, Jace. I won't let you.
You can't stop me.
Not really.
Unless you want to fight me right here on these steps. You won't win, either. You know that as well as I do.
There was a strange note in Jace's voice, a mixture of certainty and self-hatred.
Look, however determined you may be to play the solitary hero.
I'm not a hero, Jace said.
His voice was clear and toneless, as if he were stating the simplest of facts.
Think of what this will do to the Lightwoods, even if nothing happens to you. Think of Clary.
You think I haven't thought of Clary? You think I haven't thought of my family? Why do you think I'm doing this?
Do you think I don't remember what it's like to be 17? Luke answered. To think you have the power to save the world? And not just the power, but the responsibility?
Look at me, said Jace. Look at me and tell me I'm an ordinary 17-year-old.
Luke sighed.
There's nothing ordinary about you.
Now tell me it's impossible. Tell me what I'm suggesting can't be done.
When Luke said nothing, Jace went on.
Look, your plan is fine as far as that goes. Bring in Downworlders, fight Valentine all the way to the gates of Alicante. It's better than just lying down and letting him walk over you. But he'll expect it. You won't be catching him by surprise.
I could catch him by surprise. He may not know Sebastian's being followed. It's a chance at least, and we have to take whatever chances we can get.
That may be true, said Luke. But this is too much to expect of any one person, even you.
But don't you see? It can only be me, Jay said, desperation creeping into his voice. Even if Valentine senses I'm following him, he might let me get close enough.
Close enough to do what?
To kill him, said Jace. What else?
Luke looked at the boy standing below him on the stairs. He wished in some way he could reach through and see Jocelyn and her son, the way he saw her in Clary. But Jace was only, and always, himself, contained, alone, and separate.
You could do that? Luke said. You could kill your own father?
Yes, Jace said, his voice as distant as an echo.
Now, is this where you tell me I can't kill him because he is, after all, my father, and patricide is an unforgivable crime?
No.
This is where I tell you that you have to be sure you're capable of it, said Luke,
and realized, to his own surprise, that some part of him had already accepted that Jace was going to do exactly what he said he was going to do, and that he would let him.
You can't do all this, cut your ties here and hunt Valentine down on your own, just to fail at the final hurdle.
Oh, said Jace. I'm capable of it.
He looked away from Luke, down the steps toward the square that until yesterday morning had been full of bodies.
My father made me what I am, and I hate him for it. I can kill him. He made sure of that.
Luke shook his head.
Whatever your upbringing, Jace, you fought it. He didn't corrupt you.
No, Jace said. He didn't have to.
He glanced up at the sky, striped with blue and gray. Birds had begun their morning songs in the trees lining the square.
I'd better go. Is there something you wanted me to tell the Lightwoods?
No. No, don't tell them anything. They'll just blame you if they find out you knew what I was going to do and you let me go.
I left notes, he added.
They'll figure it out.
Then why...
Did I tell you all this? Because I want you to know. I want you to keep it in mind while you make your battle plans. That I'm out there, looking for Valentine. If I find him, I'll send you a message.
He smiled fleetingly.
Think of me as your backup plan.
Luke reached out and clasped the boy's hand.
If your father weren't who he is, he said, he'd be proud of you.
Jace looked surprised for a moment, and then just as quickly he flushed and drew his hand back.
If you knew, he began and bit his lip. Never mind. Good luck to you, Lucian Greymark. Ave atque vale. Let us hope there will be no real farewell, Luke said.
The sun was rising fast now, and as Jace lifted his head, frowning at the sudden intensification of the light, there was something in his face that struck Luke. Something in that mixture of vulnerability and stubborn pride.
You remind me of someone, he said without thinking. Someone I knew years ago. I know, Jace said with a bitter twist to his mouth. I remind you of Valentine.
No, said Luke in a wondering voice. But as Jace turned away, the resemblance faded, banishing the ghosts of memory.
No, I wasn't thinking of Valentine at all.
The moment Clary awoke, she knew Jace was gone, even before she opened her eyes. Her hand, still outstretched across the bed, was empty. No fingers returned the pressure of her own. She sat up slowly, her chest tight. He must have drawn the curtains back before he left, because the windows were open and bright bars of sunlight striped the bed. Clary wondered why the light hadn't woken her. From the position of the sun, it had to be afternoon. Her head felt heavy and thick, her eyes bleary. Maybe it was just that she hadn't had nightmares last night for the first time in so long, and her body was catching up on sleep. It was only when she stood up that she noticed the folded piece of paper on the stand. She picked it up with a smile hovering around her lips. So Jace had left a note. And when something heavy slid from beneath the paper and rattled to the floor at her feet, she was so surprised that she jumped back, thinking it was alive. It lay at her feet, a coil of bright metal. She knew what it was before she bent and picked it up. The chain and silver ring that Jace had worn around his neck. The family ring. She had rarely seen him without it. A sudden sensation of dread washed over her. She opened the note and scanned the first lines. Despite everything, I can't bear the thought of this ring being lost forever, any more than I can bear the thought of leaving you forever. And though I have no choice about the one, at least I can choose about the other. The rest of the letter seemed to wash together into a meaningless blur of letters. She had to read it over and over to make any sense of it. When she did finally understand, she stood staring down, watching the paper flutter as her hand shook. She understood now why Jace had told her everything he had, and why he had said one night didn't matter. You could say anything you wanted to someone you thought you were never going to see again. She had no recollection, later, of having decided what to do next, or of having hunted for something to wear. But somehow she was hurrying down the stairs, dressed in shadow hunter gear, the letter in one hand and the chain with the ring clasped hastily around her throat. The living room was empty. The fire in the grate burned down to gray ash, but noise and light emanated from the kitchen, a chatter of voices and the smell of something cooking. Pancakes? Clary thought in surprise. She wouldn't have thought Amatus knew how to make them. And she was right. Stepping into the kitchen, Clary felt her eyes widen. Isabel, her glossy dark hair swept up in a knot at the back of her neck, stood at the stove, an apron around her waist, and a metal spoon in her hand. Simon was sitting on the table behind her, his feet up on a chair, and Amatus, far from telling him to get off the furniture, was leaning against the counter looking highly entertained. Isabel waved her spoon at Clary. "Good morning," she said. "Would you like breakfast? Although I guess it's more like lunchtime." Speechless, Clary looked at Amatus, who shrugged. "They just showed up and wanted to make breakfast," she said. "And I have to admit I'm not that good a cook." Clary thought of Isabel's awful soup back at the Institute and suppressed a shudder. "Where's Luke?"
"In Brosseland with his pack," said Amatus.
"Is everything all right, Clary? You look a little..."
"Wild-eyed," Simon finished for her. "Is everything all right?"
For a moment, Clary couldn't think of a reply. "They just showed up," Amatus had said. which meant Simon had spent the entire night at Isabel's. She stared at him. He didn't look any different.
"I'm fine," she said. Now was hardly the time to be worrying about Simon's love life. "I need to talk to Isabel."
"So talk," Isabel said, poking at a misshapen object in the bottom of the frying pan that was, Clary feared, a pancake. "I'm listening."
"Alone," said Clary. Isabel frowned. "Can it wait? I'm almost done."
"No," Clary said. And there was something in her tone that made Simon, at least, sit up straight. "It can't." Simon slid off the table.
"Fine. We'll give you two some privacy," he said.
He turned to Amatis.
"Maybe you could show me those baby pictures of Luke you were talking about."
Amatis shot a worried glance at Clary but followed Simon out of the room. "I suppose I could." Isabel shook her head as the door closed behind them. Something glinted at the back of her neck. A bright, delicately thin knife was thrust through the coil of her hair, holding it in place. Despite the tableau of domesticity, she was still a shadow hunter.
"Look," she said, "if this is about Simon..."
"It's not about Simon. It's about Jace." She thrust the note at Isabel. "Read this." With a sigh, Isabel turned off the stove, took the note, and sat down to read it. Clary took an apple out of the basket on the table and sat down as Isabel, across from her at the table, scanned the note silently. Clary picked at the apple peel in silence. She couldn't imagine actually eating the apple, or, in fact, eating anything at all, ever again. Isabel looked up from the note, her eyebrows arched. "This seems kind of personal. Are you sure I should be reading it?"
"Probably not."
Clary could barely even remember the words in the letter now. In any other situation, she would never have showed it to Isabel, but her panic about Jace overrode every other concern.
"Just read to the end."
Isabel turned back to the note. When she was done, she set the paper down on the table.
"I thought he might do something like this."
"You see what I mean?" Clary said, her words stumbling over themselves.
"But he can't have left that long ago or gotten that far. We have to go after him and..."
She broke off, her brain finally processing what Isabel had said and catching up with her mouth.
"What do you mean, you thought he might do something like this?"
"Just what I said." Isabel pushed a dangling lock of hair behind her ears. "Ever since Sebastian disappeared, everyone's been talking about how to find him. I tore his room at the Penhallows apart looking for anything we could use to track him, but there was nothing. I might have known that if Jace found anything that would allow him to track Sebastian, he'd be off like a shot." She bit her lip. "I just would have hoped that he'd have brought Alec with him. Alec won't be happy."
"So you think Alec will want to go after him then?" Clary asked with renewed hope.
"Clary?" Isabel sounded faintly exasperated.
"How are we supposed to go after him? How are we supposed to have the slightest idea where he's gone?"
"There must be some way."
"We can try to track him. Jace is smart, though. He'll have figured out some way to block the tracking, just like Sebastian did."
A cold anger stirred in Clary's chest.
"Do you even want to find him? Do you even care that he's gone off on what's practically a suicide mission? He can't face down Valentine all by himself."
"Probably not," said Isabel. "But I trust that Jace has his reasons for..."
"For what? For wanting to die?"
"Clary!" Isabel's eyes blazed up with a sudden light of anger. "Do you think the rest of us are safe? We're all waiting to die or be enslaved. Can you really see Jace doing that? Just sitting around waiting for something awful to happen? Can you really see?"
"All I see is that Jace is your brother just like Max was," said Clary. "And you cared what happened to him."
She regretted it the moment she said it. Isabel's face went white, as if Clary's words had bleached the color out of the other girl's skin.
"Max," Isabel said with a tightly controlled fury, "was a little boy, not a fighter. He was 9 years old. Jace is a shadow hunter, a warrior. If we fight Valentine, do you think Alec won't be in the battle? Do you think we're not all of us at all times prepared to die if we have to, if the cause is great enough? Valentine is Jace's father. Jace probably has the best chance of all of us of getting close to him to do what he has to do.
Valentine will kill Jace if he has to, Clary said. He won't spare him.
I know. But all that matters is if he goes out in glory? Won't you even miss him?
I will miss him every day, Isabel said. For the rest of my life, which, let's face it, if Jace fails, will probably be about a week long.
She shook her head.
You don't get it, Clary. You don't understand what it's like to live always at war, to grow up with battle and sacrifice. I guess it's not your fault. It's just how you were brought up.
Clary held her hands up. I do get it. I know you don't like me, Isabel, because I'm a mundane to you. You think that's why?
Isabel broke off, her eyes bright. Not just with anger, Clary saw with surprise, but with tears.
God, you don't understand anything, do you? You've known Jace, what, a month?
I've known him for 7 years. And all the time I've known him, I've never seen him fall in love, never seen him even like anyone. He'd hook up with girls, sure. Girls always fell in love with him, but he never cared. I think that's why Alec thought...
Isabel stopped for a moment, holding herself very still.
She's trying not to cry, Clary thought in wonder. Isabel, who seemed like she never cried.
It always worried me, and my mom, too. I mean, what kind of teenage boy never even gets a crush on anyone? It was like he was always half awake where other people were concerned. I thought maybe what had happened with his father had done some sort of permanent damage to him. Like maybe he never really could love anyone. If I'd only known what had really happened with his father. But then I probably would have thought the same thing, wouldn't I? I mean, who wouldn't have been damaged by that?
And then we met you, and it was like he woke up. You couldn't see it because you'd never known him any different. But I saw it, Hodge saw it, Alec saw it. Why do you think he hated you so much?
It was like that from the second he met you. You thought it was amazing that you could see us, and it was. But what was amazing to me was that Jace could see you, too.
He kept talking about you all the way back to the Institute. He made Hodge send him out to get you. And once he brought you back, he didn't want you to leave again. Wherever you were in the room, he watched you. He was even jealous of Simon. I'm not sure he realized it himself, but he was, I could tell, jealous of a mundane. And then after what happened to Simon at the party, he was willing to go with you to the Dumore, to break Clave law, just to save a mundane. He did it for you. Because if anything had happened to Simon, you would have been hurt. You were the first person outside our family whose happiness I'd ever seen him take into consideration. Because he loved you.
Clary made a noise in the back of her throat. But that was before. Before he found out you were his sister, I know. And I don't blame you for that. You couldn't have known. And I guess you couldn't have helped that you just went right on ahead and dated Simon afterward like you didn't even care.
I thought once Jace knew you were his sister, he'd give up and get over it, but he didn't. And he couldn't. I don't know what Valentine did to him when he was a child. I don't know if that's why he is the way he is or if it's just the way he's made. But he won't get over you, Clary. He can't.
I started to hate seeing you. I hated for Jace to see you. It's like an injury you get from demon poison. You have to leave it alone and let it heal. Every time you rip the bandages off, you just open the wound up again. Every time he sees you, it's like tearing off the bandages.
I know, Clary whispered.
How do you think it is for me?
I don't know. I can't tell what you're feeling. You're not my sister.
I don't hate you, Clary. I even like you. If it were possible, there isn't anyone I'd rather Jace be with. But I hope you can understand when I say that if by some miracle we all get through this, I hope my family moves itself somewhere so far away that we never see you again.
Tears stung the backs of Clary's eyes. It was strange. She and Isabel sitting here at this table, crying over Jace for reasons that were both very different and strangely the same.
Why are you telling me all this now?
Because you're accusing me of not wanting to protect Jace, but I do want to protect him. Why do you think I was so upset when you suddenly showed up at the Penhallows? You act as if you're not a part of all this, of our world. You stand on the sidelines, but you are a part of it. You're central to it. You can't just pretend to be a bit player forever, Clary. Not when you're Valentine's daughter. Not when Jace is doing what he's doing partly because of you.
Because of me?
Why do you think he's so willing to risk himself? Why do you think he doesn't care if he dies?
Isabel's words drove into Clary's ears like sharp needles. I know why, she thought. It's because he thinks he's a demon. Thinks he isn't really human, that's why. But I can't tell you that. Can't tell you the one thing that would make you understand.
He's always thought there was something wrong with him, and now, because of you, he thinks he's cursed forever. I heard him say so to Alec. Why not risk your life if you'll never be happy no matter what you do?
Isabel, that's enough.
The door opened almost silently, and Simon stood in the doorway. Clary had nearly forgotten how much better his hearing was now.
It's not Clary's fault.
Color rose in Isabel's face. Stay out of this, Simon. You don't know what's going on. Simon stepped into the kitchen, shutting the door behind him.
I heard most of what you've been saying, he told them matter-of-factly, even through the wall. You said you don't know what Clary's feeling because you haven't known her long enough. Well, I have. If you think Jace is the only one who suffered, you're wrong there.
There was a silence. The fierceness in Isabel's expression was fading slightly. In the distance, Clary thought she heard the sound of someone knocking on the front door. Luke, probably, or Maya bringing more blood for Simon. It's not because of me that he left, Clary said, and her heart began to pound. Can I tell them Jace's secret, now that he's gone? Can I tell them the real reason he left? The real reason he doesn't care if he dies? Words started to pour out of her, almost against her will. When Jace and I went to the Wayland Manor, when we went to find the Book of the White, she broke off as the kitchen door swung open. Amethyst stood there, the strangest expression on her face. For a moment, Clary thought she was frightened, and her heart skipped a beat. But it wasn't fright on Amethyst's face, not really. She looked as she had when Clary and Luke had suddenly showed up at her front door. She looked as if she'd seen a ghost. Clary, she said slowly, there's someone here to see you. Before she could finish, that someone pushed past her into the kitchen. Amethyst stood back, and Clary got her first good look at the intruder, a slender woman dressed in black. At first, all Clary saw was the Shadow Hunter gear, and she almost didn't recognize her. Not until her eyes reached the woman's face, and she felt her stomach drop out of her body the way it had when Jace had driven their motorcycle off the edge of the Dumor roof, a 10-story fall. It was her mother.
Part 3. The Way to Heaven. Oh yes, I know the way to heaven was easy. We found the little kingdom of our passion that all can share who walk the road of lovers. In wild and secret happiness we stumbled, and gods and demons clamored in our senses. Siegfried Sassoon, The Imperfect Lover. Chapter 16. Articles of Faith. Since the night she'd come home to find her mother gone, Clary had imagined seeing her again, well and healthy, so often that her imaginings had taken on the quality of a photograph that had become faded from being taken out and looked at too many times. Those images rose up before her now, even as she stared in disbelief. Images in which her mother, looking healthy and happy, hugged Clary and told her how much she'd missed her, but that everything was going to be all right now. The mother in her imaginings bore very little resemblance to the woman who stood in front of her now. She'd remembered Jocelyn as gentle and artistic, a little bohemian with her paint-splattered overalls, her red hair and pigtails, or fastened up with a pencil into a messy bun. This Jocelyn was as bright and sharp as a knife, her hair drawn back sternly, not a wisp out of place. The harsh black of her gear made her face look pale and hard. Nor was her expression the one Clary had imagined. Instead of delight, there was something very like horror in the way she looked at Clary, her green eyes wide.
"Clary," she breathed, "you're
clothes.
Clary looked down at herself. She had on Amatis's black shadow hunter gear, exactly what her mother had spent her whole life making sure her daughter would never have to wear. Clary swallowed hard and stood up, clutching the edge of the table with her